Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Trail Talk High Pointing Podcast. I'm your host, Lauren. And today, Patty Maniscalco and I are going to talk about the great State 48, Arizona. Patty, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Lauren. Thanks for having me again.
So listeners will know that Patty told her high pointing story on episode 27. And then she was on the most recent episode titled What's in a Name, where she was a guest on a panel where we talked about the history of High Point names. And Patty is a wealth of knowledge about High Point history. And she has a blog called Outdoor Pilgrim, which I will put a link to in the show notes. And it's Patty writes everything that you could possibly want to know about high points and different hikes and different through hikes. Also, we'll get into your Arizona Trail through hike. And it's just, like I said, she's a wealth of knowledge. And I'm so lucky that you're on the podcast today. So again, thanks for being here. And you are recording this episode from Tucson, Arizona. So this is very appropriate. And let's start off with how each of us were introduced to different hikes in Arizona. So how did you get started hiking in Arizona?
Well, I have been coming to Arizona on and off for the last 10 years, doing different trips and adventures. But I would say that the thing that really allowed me to see a lot of the state, or at least 800 miles of the state, is when I did a through hike on the Arizona Trail, which, for your listeners who don't know what that is, it's an 800-mile trail. It starts on the southern border of Arizona with Mexico. And then it goes up through the state, kind of weaving in and out of the mountain ranges throughout the state, all the way up to the Utah border. So you basically walk the entire state of Arizona from, you know, the southern border to the northern border, and head through just this really diverse terrain that I think would surprise most people who haven't spent a lot of time in Arizona.
Yeah. So where on the Utah border does it end? Is it around Monument Valley, like in Page?
It's west of Page. It's in Vermilion Cliffs National Monument. There's a campground there called State Line Campground right on the Arizona-Utah border. And there's a monument there. Yeah, it's just west of the Wave. So maybe 25 minutes west of Page.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, I lived in Arizona a few years ago when my husband was stationed there. And we were in a town in southwest Arizona called Yuma. And my husband at the time was the executive officer at the Military Freefall School at Yuma Proving Ground. And military freefall is basically combat skydiving. And so Yuma is a perfect place to do that because it's actually one of the sunniest places in the country with, I think, 241 days of sunshine. Sunshine being defined as less than 1/8 cloud coverage. So it's a good place for skydiving. Also, Yuma is where the state low point in Arizona is. So very low elevation, which if you're skydiving, doesn't put you in a very high altitude, at least. So if you have to skydive from like 13,000 feet above wherever you are, you want to have a low starting point. So Yuma is a really good place to do that activity. And Patty is a veteran. And so you know that sometimes when you're stationed in these different military towns, you're told before you move there, like, oh, there's nothing to do. You're going to be so bored. Mm-hmm. It's just like such a lame town. And that's what we were told about Yuma. And then when we got there, we just found so many things to do. So many great hikes. And then if you just go over the border, west into California, you will find the Imperial Sand Dunes. Those are beautiful. And then there were some hikes we did out there. But I think you just have to make the best out of every place that you're in. And fortunately, Yuma turned out to be a great place to do that. We explore the Kofa Wilderness. We lived right next to the Gila Mountain Range, and there were some great hikes in there. So we'll get into some of that later. And I also did an internship as I was getting out of the Army in Tucson. So I lived there for a winter, And that's when I found great hikes in Sabino Canyon and Mount Lemmon and the Catalina State Park, Saguaro National Park. And so when I found out that Patty was in Tucson this winter, I was like, oh, that is my favorite place to be in the winter. We've got to talk about Arizona. And so here we are. And I can't wait to just get into all of these different Arizona topics. Now let's get into Arizona geography. Now, a lot of people, when they think of Arizona, it is the Grand Canyon State. I called it State 48 when I opened up the show, but that's just because it is the 48th state. But it's called the Grand Canyon State. And maybe that's what people think of when they think of Arizona, or they only think of the desert. But it's actually much more diverse than that. High pointers know that you can find yourself in the middle of a lot of snow if you're there in the winter. There are some national forests there and many other things. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the geography of Arizona?
Of course. So much like you, I think I didn't know too much about Arizona before I started spending time here. My mental image of the place was flat, open desert with a lot of cactus. And there certainly is some of that. But I think first you might need to start off with the fact that like Arizona is a huge state. It's the sixth largest state in the United States. And so, you know, right behind New Mexico, and then, you know, Montana, Texas, California, Alaska. So if you're coming from a smaller state, you don't realize how big the state is. You look at the map, it's a big square block, and it's really hard to picture what it is if all you do is drive through I-10 or I-40 as you're going through the state, right? Because the highways aren't built in the prettiest spots of the state. They're not built in the mountains. They're the places to get you from point A to point B. But you've got three major deserts that converge in Arizona. So you've got the Sonoran Desert, which is kind of in the southwestern portion of the state coming up from Mexico. You've got the Chihuahuan Desert, which is in the southeastern portion of the state, you know, spreading into New Mexico and Mexico. And then you've got the Mojave Desert, which comes in from California and kind of hits the upper western portion of the state. But it's not just flat desert. I mean, there are 210 named mountain ranges in Arizona, which, again, that's a lot. Lot of the southern part of the state is what they call the Sky Islands. And they're called that because the surrounding area will be flat, and then all of a sudden you have this huge, very prominent mountain that just seems to come out of nowhere. And then, you know, it goes back flat again, and then maybe 20 miles later you've got another one, and 20 miles later you've got another one. So you've got all these very prominent mountains kind of coming up through the state. In the northern portion of the state, you've got volcanic fields and craters. So we're talking north up near the High Point, near Humphreys Peak. And the San Francisco peaks up there, there's a volcanic field near Flagstaff that's 3,000 square miles. So to like put that into context, that's the size of Delaware. That's all volcanic. You've got Monument Valley, which is kind of in the northeastern part. And I think a lot of us recognize or can picture that. It's in a lot of Western movies. You've got these big, tall buttes that stick up. And
the Forrest Gump scene. Where he's running.
Exactly. The Forrest Gump scene where he's running. So you've got, you know, sandstone buttes going up. Right in the center of the state, running kind of east or west, you've got this 200-mile-long escarpment called the Mogollon Rim. And it basically cleaves the state in half. And so on the bottom or the southern portion of that escarpment, you're several thousand feet lower. And then on the northern portion of the escarpment, once you get up, you're up on the Colorado Plateau, which continues north beyond the state lines, and you're several thousand feet higher. So for any of us who have visited the Grand Canyon, you know, you're kind of surprised to learn that as you're standing on the South Rim, you're standing at 7,000 feet elevation. Now, it's kind of flat, you know, around you, and you're looking down, of course, towards the Colorado River, which is about the same elevation as here in Tucson. So you're, you know, closer to like 2,000 feet when you get down into the canyon. And then when you get back up on the North Rim, you're at 8,000 feet. So you're pretty high elevation once you get up on the Colorado Plateau. You know, you've got just south of Flagstaff in the Sedona area, you've got the Red Rocks region, which, you know, beautiful, beautiful country to go hike in, lots of caves and arches and things like that. If you go back down to the southeastern portion of the state, you've got Shirakawa National Monument, and it's got all the hoodoos, and it's beautiful terrain down there. And of course, you've got lots and lots of canyons, which we can talk about that later. You know, beyond the Grand Canyon, you've got the slot canyons like Antelope Canyon and the Wave. You've got Marble Canyon. You've got Walnut Canyon National Monument, Oak Creek Canyon. And within this state, there's so many natural wonders that there are 22 national parks and monuments here in Arizona, yeah, and 6 national forests. So, mm-hmm, like, if you think about how diverse that geography is, and I said before, like, 6 largest states. So obviously there's a lot of terrain to cover, but the diversity within that terrain and the geography, there's a lot of ability to do, you know, some county high pointing here or just some peak bagging. You know, the tallest peak is over 13,000 feet here. So I think that's correct. I'm sorry, it's 12,633 feet. So yeah, almost 13,000 feet. But that's pretty high when you think about it.
Right. And I think you can ski on Mount Lemmon in the winter. And I yes. think I read somewhere that it's like the southernmost skiable mountain in the country. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's the southernmost ski resort in the country.
Okay, ski resort.
And I did visit the ski resort last year. Last year was a really high snow year for Arizona and California. So yeah, I came out here to go high pointing in February thinking I was going to get to bag all these peaks. I had this great itinerary and route I was going to go around, and like Mount Lemmon, there were snowmen built on that. I got a picture of a snowman and me on Mount Lemmon. And I was, you know, post holding on the backside of Mount Lemmon to get one of the county high points, and just had to change my plans because there was just too much snow, which yeah. people don't necessarily think of snow. If you're thinking about Tucson or Phoenix, well, you know, you don't think of snow, but places like Flagstaff, they know there's a lot of snow in the northern portion of the state because, again, they're mm-hmm. at 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 feet elevation.
And Tucson is so interesting, especially as you go up Mount Lemmon. So when I've gone up Mount Lemmon, I start the drive like in, you know, in the Sabino Canyon area, and you're just in this forest of saguaros, and it is so, so beautiful. And the further up you drive, you just watch the changes, and then you start seeing signs for bears. I've never seen a bear on Mount Lemmon. Have you?
I have not, but I did okay. see bear activity up near the Mogollon Rim. So,
okay.
Yeah, there, when I did the Highline Trail, which kind of runs east to west near Pine, Arizona, it's about 58 miles long, and they do an ultra race on it. It's crazy. It's like 20,000 feet of elevation difference of, you know, vertical gain and loss in that 58 miles. But there were bears near one of the campgrounds there last year. No, 2 years ago when I was there.
Wow. And that's up by Payson, right?
Yes, north of Payson, just a little bit further.
Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful area.
So anybody who's taken that drive from Phoenix towards Flagstaff, and they see it looks like a mountain range coming in front of them, and it stretches as far as you can see from the east to the west, as far as your eye can go, and that's the Mogollon Rim. It's just, yeah. you know, very steep, vertical cleave through the state where you're going to go up several thousand feet in elevation.
Mm-hmm. I'll edit this out, but we went to Payson. We like rented a cabin there mm-hmm. one weekend, and that drive from Phoenix to Payson was so beautiful. It wasn't on the interstate the whole time. I don't know what highway it was. Maybe mm-hmm. I won't.
I think
edit
it's
this
17.
Out.
I think
it wasn't Interstate 17 because that'll take you to Flagstaff. But this one went kind of east.
Okay. Yeah.
I forget what. I'll put it on YouTube. It was just so beautiful. And this is another thing about Arizona that I don't think people realize is how green it gets. You know, the desert in the springtime, or just that central area. It's not just sand, although there's a lot of that, especially in Yuma. And you won't find a lot of saguaros in Yuma either. But we'll get into that. One thing I do want to say about Yuma is, for as beautiful as it is there, it is so hot. Okay. The summers are just brutal. And there were some days in the summer where I was like, I wonder what the temperature is in Death Valley right now, because we're right up there. And I would look at Death Valley, and sometimes we were hotter than Death Valley. Like Death Valley was a couple degrees cooler. But it is right up there. And I think Yuma is usually about 10 degrees warmer than Tucson. Tucson's at about 2000 and some change elevation, and mm-hmm. Yuma's at 100 and some change feet. So there's a slight change there, and you won't find a lot of saguaros or even a lot of wildlife in Yuma. You can find the wildlife in Kofa National Wildlife Refuge, but you won't see the javelina or the coyotes that you will find in Tucson. And that was one of my favorite things about the early runs that I would do in Yuma, or I'm sorry, in Tucson. Before the sun came up, I'd be out running and I could hear the javelinas and the coyotes. You know, I don't know if they found food or something, but they would just have mm-hmm. parties. That's what it sounded like. They were just having this big party. And I miss those just wild sounds of Tucson, because you're right up against where I was in West Tucson. I was right up against Saguaro West National Park and then Tucson Mountain Park. But anyway, very, very beautiful out there. And it's also Arizona Archaeology Month, according to the National Park Service app. And so I read that there were going to be some ranger-led programs at Petrified Forest National Park, which is mm-hmm. also very, very beautiful, and a diverse landscape there too. I remember when I drove there, it was a windy day, and I stepped out of the car because it's kind of one of those like drive-through parks, and you park and then you get out and walk around. And I got out of the car, and I'm from Tornado Alley, I'm from Illinois. I've never experienced wind like this in my life. You would open your mouth and then your cheeks would just fill up with air. It was almost suffocating. I've never experienced anything like that. And you had to like really put an effort to walk, you know, going against the wind. It was crazy. And I've heard from another guest on the show, they're like, that same thing happened to me when I was there. So you will encounter all kinds of weather depending on where you are in Arizona.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember going through a Petrified National Forest as well. And again, most people, if you said, where is a Petrified National Forest, or not that there's just one, but you know, in terms of the national park system, most people wouldn't guess Northern Arizona. They'd think of some state that has lots and lots of trees, right? Well, Arizona's got the largest, ponderosa pine forest in the world. Mm-hmm. So yes, it is a forest state. And as I mentioned before, it's got six national forests here right outside Tucson. We've got the Colorado National Forest, the Coronado National Forest. And, it's very, very, green. And, you know, again, it's not right by the interstate. So I would love more visitors to come and visit Arizona and get off the interstate and see the cactus when they're in bloom in the springtime, and not just, you know, think of them, or the ocotillo with their red flowers blooming in the springtime. It's a really, really beautiful place. And for people who love to bird as well, and not just hike, but they're into, you know, birding, there's a lot of bird wildlife here. I remember when I was hiking the Arizona Trail, and I was specifically in the southern portion. So when you start the trail, you know, you, like I said, you start at the Mexico border and you immediately go north up Miller Peak, which is 10,000 feet. So you start and you're immediately up at high elevation, or you climb up to it and then you come back down again. And for those who are in the Army, then you can see Fort Huachuca down below you and their, military installation down there, which is one of the Army posts. And you continue to go down towards the Canelo Hills. And I remember being in that area, and every single day that I woke up, it was like the songbirds were greeting me. And wow. I wished I had like some sort of birding app to identify them, because I don't know a lot of birds. But the amount of birds I saw in southern Arizona just astounded me.
That's fascinating. Again, it's not something that you would think about. But then if you're ever in Arizona in the springtime and you're able to see the cactus blooms, it is so beautiful. Not if you're allergic, though.
Not if you have that allergy. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I think that's a great time to visit the desert. The Sonoran Desert is when everything is blooming. Like you said, the ocotillos turn red, the tops, you know, turn red. And my favorite is the saguaro cactus bloom. I didn't know before I went to Arizona that cacti grew flowers. I just didn't know that. I don't know how they like spread, but I just didn't know that they bloomed.
I didn't know a lot about cactus either. I remember in 2016, my best friend and I, we decided that we were going to do a rim to rim to rim on the Grand Canyon. So that means you start, for us, we started at the South Rim. We go all the way down to the Colorado River, back up to the North Rim, back down to the Colorado River, and back up to the South Rim, you know, as fast as you can. A lot of people like to trail run it. It is a lot of vertical elevation zones. And when we got down to the bottom near the Colorado River, all the cactus, because we did it in May, so all the cactus were in bloom. And if you've ever been inside the Grand Canyon, like looking across the Grand Canyon is beautiful. But once you go inside, it's a completely different ecosystem. And when you get down there, it just seeing all those cactus in bloom, because again, much warmer down near the Colorado River, it's like 1,800 feet elevation down there, so similar to Tucson. So in May, everything was green and pink and yellow and blooming, and you know, it was a completely different world down there compared to what people could see if they were just standing up the edge of the rim and looking across and looking down in there. I mean, you do 56 vertical feet of elevation gain going back and forth like that. I mean, think about that. 50,000 feet of vertical gain in 48 miles.
How long did it take you rim to rim to rim?
We decided to stop on the North Rim and sleep overnight because we didn't want to be doing it in the dark. Like some people, they do. They just run the entire continuous thing. So we, we started one in the morning, got up around dinner time on the opposite side, so 24 miles to get to the opposite side. And then we slept overnight, got back up the next morning, and I think we were done 3 o'clock the following afternoon. And we were beat. And I remember there was some guy that was standing there at the top of, because we took the Bright Angel Trail. You have two trails on the south side of the Grand Canyon. You can take the Bright Angel or you can take the South Kaibab. And they meet down at the Colorado River. So it's kind of like a Y if you think about it, like, you know, meet, and then they have a singular route called the North Kaibab that goes up to the North Rim. And those are called the corridor trails. And so, you know, the Bright Angel is the more popular. It's near a lot of the concessionaires in the park. And so we had gotten right at the top of the Bright Angel. We just finished this journey. We're like, we are beat. It was hot. Sean, my friend, was suffering from a little bit of elevation or altitude sickness on the first day and still getting over that and dehydration. And we were just beat. And then some guy is sitting there at the trailhead, looks at us as he's eating his ice cream cone. He's like, oh yeah, that canyon looks like it's a really fun hike. And he didn't know that we had hiked all the way across and back. I think he thought we went down to like the 2 mile rest area and turned around, like a lot of people do. And not to begrudge them, but what we had done was not like hike 2 miles down and back. But he's sitting there looking at his ice cream cone going, yeah, that canyon sure is tough. You don't know, brother. You don't know.
You get all kinds of visitors at any national park.
We knew what we had just done, and we were so proud of ourselves. And it is one of those experiences that will forever live in my mind as like a great adventure.
Oh, and that's amazing.
Not for most people to try it. You need to be very, very fit to do that. Do not go out without training. It's very dangerous. A lot of people get rescued out of the park. A lot of people die in the park. So either be heat exhaustion. I mean, Sean at the time, he was active duty military, very fit. And even he was having a really hard time. And you just don't know whose altitude sickness is going to hit. It doesn't, you know, your fitness doesn't necessarily correlate with when altitude sickness is going to hit you, right? You can be the fittest person in the world and still get altitude sickness, or you could be very unfit and not have the altitude affect you at all. So it's just better to be prepared before taking on an adventure like that. So,
and you also encounter a lot of temperature change.
Yes, huge temperature change between 7,000 or 8,000 feet elevation to 2,000. And I remember when we went back a couple years later when we were traveling, I think it was in 2020, and the park had just reopened from COVID. And we took our son down there to what was then called Indian Gardens. It's called Havasupai Gardens now. So it's just maybe 5 miles below the rim. And when we started, we had long pants and jackets on. And when we got down there, it was like 84 degrees at 10 in the morning because of the elevation yeah. change.
Yeah. It's the opposite of a mountain.
Exactly. Yeah. So instead of getting colder, it gets much warmer. And yeah, it's wow. fun though.
I remember I was in Bishop, California. My husband and I were climbing Mount Whitney, and the day before we drove up to Yosemite on 395, we stopped in Bishop for gas or something, and I saw this guy in a t-shirt, and it was a picture of the Grand Canyon, and it said, getting down is optional, getting to the bottom is optional, getting to the top is mandatory, or whatever that quote was that... Oh, I have to hang on. I gotta look up who said it, and then Ed Vesters. What do you say? Yeah, that's what he said. Okay. So the shirt—it was a picture of the Grand Canyon, and it said, "Getting to the bottom is optional. Getting to the top is mandatory," which is the opposite of what Ed Vesters famously said: "Is that getting to the top is optional, getting back down to the bottom is mandatory." About climbing mountains, obviously. But this shirt was, I think he had it made with a group that he went hiking rim to rim with, because it said like the year that they went and all their names and stuff. But I thought awesome. that was a good way to put it, I think, for hiking the Grand Canyon.
And we'll get to this later, but there's so many canyons here in Arizona. There's something here called the 2020 Challenge, which is... Yep. 20 different peaks that you climb and 20 different canyons that you descend. And so it's a nice mix of high pointing and low pointing, if you will.
Mm-hmm. That's fun. The last time I was at the Grand Canyon, I've been there a couple times, but the last time I was there, my husband and I were in Sedona and we stayed at some Airbnb there. And then one day we drove out to the Grand Canyon and our plan was just to hike down, just do the, you know, the normal hike down and then hike up. We're at the south of, you know, that main visitor center down there.
Mm-hmm.
And the day before we were in Sedona and we were hiking on Bell Rock and sun was setting, it was getting dark. And we decided to like kind of take the shortcut, which involved a jump off of not really a cliff, but definitely a surface that was very steep. And I watched my husband do it first. And he landed great. I was like, okay, I've done that. You know, I was in the 82nd Airborne Division. I've dropped to the ground many times before. I was like, I can do this. Well, I jumped down and my heels just came out underneath me. And I ended up just sitting on this rock. And I don't know if I broke my tailbone because we didn't go to hospital, but I definitely bruised it. And oh my gosh, sitting down hurt. So that whole ride to the Grand Canyon, I was in so much pain. And then I got out of the car and I'm like, oh, I can't do this. So all that to say, we nixed the hike down to the canyon and I just sat on the bench at like Mather Point and just looked out.
Well, you'll have another opportunity. You can take your daughter Rory out there and see the park again and you know, see it through her eyes, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's so much fun watching her be a little junior ranger. You are doing the Arizona County High Points.
Yeah.
How's that going?
Well, so as I mentioned before, Arizona is a very, very big state. Yet despite its large size, there's only 15 counties in the state. So it's a very attainable goal on its face, right? Yeah, 15 county high points. How hard could that possibly be? Except for that there is a lot of driving and a lot of them are remote. So most high pointers that come out to Arizona probably see the, you know, one, which is the Coconino County High Point, which is Humphreys Peak, which I mentioned before, 12,633 feet. So, and it's also the most prominent of the county high points. So of the other 14, they range in elevation from just under 5,000 feet to, you know, 12,000 feet. So very, very, prominent peaks as well. So there's not any like walk-ups, although technically Mount Lemmon is kind of a drive up because you can drive pretty close to the top. You've got about maybe another 3/4 of a mile hike to the summit, and at the summit of Mount Lemmon, which is not the second tallest, it's like the sixth tallest. It's about 9,000 feet. The summit of Mount Lemmon actually has an observatory atop of it, and it's run by the University of Arizona, and it's one of two high points that have had observatories atop here. Arizona is known as one of the dark sky places where there's not a lot of additional city ambient lighting because the cities tend to be pretty far apart, so you can get really great stargazing. And so, as I mentioned, Mount Lemmon has an observatory that's run by the University of Arizona. So if you actually want to set foot on like the monument of the high point, you have to contact them and get access because it's actually got a gate off around it, which I found out last year when I went there in the snow, stopped at the ski resort and then hiked that last, mile or whatever to the summit. And then I got like chain link fence and big snow drifts. And it's like, darn it, I didn't know I was supposed to call somebody to get access. And of course, you're looking around to see if maybe there's somebody that's there that'll let you in. But because of all the snow last year, I think they were on minimal manning and just open for specific visits. The other one that had an observatory atop of it is over on the western, southwestern portion of the state, and it's called Harquahala Mountain, and the Smithsonian used to have an observatory up there. So when you make it to the summit, there's some outbuildings out there, and there's a lot of solar panels up there, and some OHV trails that go near it. So you could technically probably drive up to that one if you had an OHV, but most people are going to hike up the trail, which it's a really, really pretty hike. It's probably one of the few times I've accidentally ended up on YouTube because there was a guy out there trail running, also doing county high points, and he had some sort of GoPro on there. And he runs past me on my as I'm coming on my way down, and we end up meeting at the trailhead. And he's like, "Oh, I'm doing all this YouTube, and I'm doing these county high points." And he had driven up from Phoenix, and he's like, "Here's my YouTube channel, so you can watch me on my county high points." So that
That's
was kind of
cool.
funny that I ended up in that video. So those two might be some of the easier ones that are accessible if you have the means to get it. But the rest of them, you do have to hike up. And I know you had told me about the one in Yuma County, Signal Peak, which is in the southwest corner of the state in the Kofa Wilderness. And that is a beautiful, beautiful hike. It's the lowest one of the county high points, but just stunningly beautiful. Bighorn sheep. It's in a wildlife refuge, as I mentioned. And I know you've had that experience on that. I hiked it last year under a full moon. And oh my goodness, what a wonderful, wonderful experience to have a high point and then camping down in the wilderness area under the full moon at the foot of the peak.
Yeah, we would camp out there too around the Palm Canyon. Is that what it's called? That like little
Yeah, I think,
oasis. I think it's
yeah.
like the only place where you can find that native palm outside of California is in that Palm Canyon portion of Kofa. So we would camp there and then yeah, we drove to the well, as close as we could to that trailhead, and we were the only people out there. And I
Yeah.
didn't see any well, I saw a tarantula. That was the extent of the wildlife that I saw. But it is just like the solitude and just the sense of peace that you feel out there in Kofa is it's hard to put into words. And I know that people who love the outdoors, when we find a spot that we love, we don't want to tell anybody about it. But I love telling people about Kofa because it's a magical place. And there are a lot of people, I guess they boondock, around the mountains. But once you really got to explore that place, really like go on the hikes and go in the mountains and do Signal Peak. And also we hiked Castle Dome. Have you seen Castle Dome? It's It's a very prominent feature in Kofa. And if you go into Yuma, the city, like every other street is named Castle Dome. And there are so many things in Yuma called Castle Dome because it's anywhere you look from Yuma, you can see that dome out in Kofa. And we climbed that, and it's just so rugged out there in Kofa. And I think that's what I like about it most. I love a manicured trail too, and I really appreciate all the work that trail maintenance does, or trail maintainers do. But when you get out there, it's like you're in the wild, it feels like, especially on Castle Dome, because, and if anyone listening wants to do that hike, bring trekking poles. We did not. And there is just scree everywhere. And I kept falling, and I would, of course, you know, put my hands out to not hit my face. And I had so many spikes all over my hands. I was just picking them out for days because, you know, I would just put my hand on a cactus just to not put my face in it. Yeah. And then when we got to the top, you know, of course it was beautiful, but there were all these Cholla cacti. And
I love Cholla.
Those things, oh yeah, they're beautiful, especially like if you see them, you know, in a certain light, like when the sun's setting or something like that.
The teddy bear Cholla, it's beautiful.
So those, it's the teddy bear Chollas that were on top of Castle Dome. And I was just walking by them. I promise I did not touch them, but it's like they just latched onto my leg. And so we're standing on top of Castle Dome, just enjoying these unbelievably vast views. And I'm screaming because there's just Cholla cacti all over my legs, and my husband's picking them out. Such a mess up there.
Another tip or trick, you mentioned trekking poles, and I think you definitely need trekking poles on most of Arizona's county high points because they're so prominent and so steep. And, you know, like you said, there's some really good trails, like the one going up Humphreys Peak, but there's a lot of them that are much more rustic, and because there's so much cactus around, in addition to your trekking poles, bring a small, like a fine tooth comb, just a little inexpensive comb, because that teddy bear cactus or teddy bear Cholla that you're talking about is called jumping cactus sometimes, because it does, in fact, like just the air of you moving past it, it will pull them off. And of course, they look like, for people who've never seen the teddy bear Cholla, it's got like all these little spikes coming out of it, like a little round ball of spikes. So you can't grab a hold of it to pull it out of you. But if you have a fine tooth comb, you can put that between your skin and the cactus and kind of pull it out without having to touch the cactus. So just a little for desert hiking in Arizona. It's just always carry a small little inexpensive, you know, dollar comb to help if you get cactus in your leg.
That's a good one. And, you know, sometimes you can get like cactus spikes in different parts of your body and you don't see them, but you feel them. Yeah. And I was told by somebody in Yuma, just take a bar of soap and rub that across your skin, you know, dry. And it sometimes catches them. It worked for me. Another hike that I did, that I don't know anyone else that has done this one, but it's called the Barry Goldwater Mountain Range, and it's between Gila Bend and Yuma. And so if you're driving on Interstate 8, say from Tucson to like San Diego, you would pass through the Barry Goldwater Mountain Range. And there's an exit called Mohawk Valley. And in Mohawk Valley, that's where Mohawk Peak is. And you'll see this peak, and it just looks like a perfect just triangle. And it almost, you know, when you're driving past on the interstate, it looks like, oh, you can't stand on top of that because that's how sharp the top looks. But I couldn't find it on all trails, and I ended up like going to the second page of Google to find like somebody who wrote about this. And it was from like years ago, like over a decade. And my husband and I, we did like a little recon one day of like where the trailhead is, and we just got out of the car to see, you know, if it was possible. And so the next weekend we went there and we did it. And I think we're the first people in 2023 to do that hike because we, you know, signed the book up there. But that was one of the scariest hikes I've ever done, because there were so many "if you fall, you die" moments on that. And this was before I had my daughter. Now I wouldn't do it because I cannot describe how scary it was. Like, there were some points where you had to maintain 4 points of contact and have very good traction on your shoes. But that, you know, getting to the top of that was just one of the coolest hikes that we'd ever done. And again, it was just my husband and I out on a mountain in Southwest Arizona. And there are so many moments that you can have in that part of the state. It's just you on a mountain. And I'll say the only thing that ruined it on the Mohawk Peak was that you can hear the interstate traffic driving by.
Yeah. Well, I think before we circle back to some of the counting high points, I was thinking about a couple other things that I would tell people. If you're going to come out and do high pointing or hiking any of the peaks in Arizona, in addition to trekking poles, in addition to the cone, I would tell people bring gaiters. And they can be like the small gaiters that go over your, you know, if you wear running shoes, or they could be like the knee-high gaiters, like you might wear if you're going over a glacier, because there's places that have a lot of scree and loose things and a lot of prickly things. Yeah. And that could, you know, maybe save you a little bit of heartburn or heartache. I would tell people absolutely bring sun gloves and a sun shirt. You know, a sun shirt with a hood on it is an essential thing in Arizona, because even if you're doing high pointing in the wintertime, like, the sun can be really, really intense here. The UV is very strong. And a sun shirt, whether you get it as like a hiking shirt or a fishing shirt or, you know, something with a hood, and of course, a hat and sunscreen, because a lot of these high points are going to take you a bit of time. And they're not going to have water, so bring lots of water and protect yourself from the sun. And that makes it a little bit different than high pointing, say, on the East Coast. You're not going to need all those resources necessarily if you're doing, you know, high pointing in the East Coast or the Midwest or the Great Lakes area. But once you get to the desert Southwest and you see what the mountains look like here, you know, the mountains in the West look different than the mountains in the East, period. Mm-hmm. But there's so much exposed terrain as you're going up these mountains. You're not going to have the tree cover. So just, you know, come prepared and, you know, you'll have a better time if you come prepared.
Yeah. Take it from us. Take it from me.
Take it from all of us who have made the mistakes of not doing those things, right? Learn from our mistakes.
Yeah. So can we get into some of the county high points that are on tribal lands, and how do you access those?
Yeah, so there is one that is on tribal lands. It's the Navajo County High Point. It's in the northeastern portion of the state. It's called Black Mesa High Point. It's not Black Mesa like Oklahoma's Black Mesa. It's the highest point on this mesa that you have to climb up to. And because it's on the Navajo Reservation, you actually go, there's a couple of campgrounds, there's a couple of like convenience stores, like county stores near the high point where you can get basically a hiking or camping permit on tribal lands. And so that's what you need. It's not super expensive. It's, you know, I don't remember what it is, $5, $15, something along those lines. But you do need to have it because you are crossing onto tribal lands. And, you know, it's kind of like their recreational permit to be on their lands.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do decide that you want to go out and see the Black Mesa High Point, you it's fairly easy. You can find the information on peakbagger.com. Prior High Pointers, County High Pointers will post where they bought their permits, and it's multiple places. I think the most common one is the campground that's closest to the High Point. And then there is also another High Point that you're going to have to pay to access because it's in Hualapai Mountain Park. So the Hualapai Mountains are in the northwest portion, so continuing in the north and going all the way to the other side towards the town of Kingman, maybe an hour and a half from Las Vegas. You've got Hualapai Mountain Park, and the top portion of that park in the wintertime, it's got great like cross-country skiing, snowshoeing trails that you can go on. And in the spring and the summer and the fall, people will want to climb Hualapai Mountain. But again, because it is a state park, there is an entrance fee. So your National Park Service permit will not work for that, or Forest Service or any of those. It is a state park, so you need to pay the state park fee, which I think is closer to $20 to do Wallapai Mountain. Those are the two county high points that if you do want to try to summit those, you do need to have some sort of plan and some cash maybe to plan both of those. And those are both 8,000 foot peaks. So again, good amount of prominence from where you're going to park to where you're going to end. And there's a little bit of a rock scramble on the top of Wallapai Mountain Park. The trail doesn't go straight to the summit. You have to do just a very easy rock scramble, but still it's something to be aware of, depending on what, you know, your limitations might be. And then as you go south to the southeast corner, you've got another high point that's actually in a national monument. So,
Is it in the Chiricahua?
Yeah, it's in the Chiricahua National Monument, which I mentioned before has a lot of hoodoos. And so it's called Chiricahua Peak. And so that's another one that if you don't have a national park pass, depending on how you want to approach the summit, you may need to also perhaps pay for that one as well.
So how many of the county high points are along the Arizona Trail?
About half of them are within a short detour off the Arizona Trail. I think I was telling you before that last year I was coming back, because I did not start doing any county high points until after I completed the Arizona Trail, and I was trucking back up the backside of Mount Lemmon. There's one of the high points is a liner. There's only one of them, and for people who don't know what a liner is, it's like Connecticut's high point. It's right on the state line, well, in this case, the county line. It's not the summit of the peak, so Rice Peak is on the backside of Mount Lemmon as you're coming back down the Arizona Trail. And so I am choosing to, you know, come from the north side. I'm hiking back up, you know, towards Rice Peak, and I'm actually on the Arizona Trail. And then I realize, okay, well, I got to find where the county line is. And I've got my little topographic map and my GPS, and, you know, I've marked it beforehand. And I literally walk 50 meters off the Arizona Trail to this little spot. And there was a little rock cairn and a summit register right there for high pointers. So I couldn't believe I walked 50 meters past a high point once before. And because it's not prominent, it's not distinguishable, you don't even know it's there.
Yeah, you could have done all these high points while you did the trail. You know, I think so many listeners can relate, though. I know that I can, because before I was high pointing, I had done a lot of road trips throughout the country, just, you know, going here and there. And I could have stopped at so many high points. I could have stopped at so many other, hikes that I want to do now. And I just like, but at the time I either didn't know or I, you know, wasn't on my radar. And looking back, I'm like, oh, why didn't I know that? But, you know, it's all about the journey, and going back to visit these places can be fun too.
Well, the same thing happened to me when I was doing the Mogollon Rim Trail, which, again, it runs along the bottom portion of the escarpment. So you're kind of like at the base of the rim. And it's an old trail that was used by pioneers. It would go back and forth between towns of trade. So that's why it's just shy of 60 miles. And the entire time I'm on the trail, I'm looking at different points that are above me that are, you know, on the top of the escarpment. And I don't know what the names of these different points are. And I come back and eventually learn that two of the ones that we're looking at, Myrtle Point and Promontory Butte, which kind of, you know, again, they come out, and so you're looking at them the entire time you're hiking. They're both, they share the honor of being the county high point. So at the top of Gila County, they're both at roughly the same elevation. And I've been looking at these for 60 miles going, oh, that's a beautiful place. And that's a great point of reference. And I don't even realize that I'm staring at the county high point the entire time, or the two county high points for Gila County. So again, I've got to go back, because I didn't climb up the escarpment and go and tag them.
But luckily, it's a beautiful place to go back to, though.
Exactly. Yeah.
So how many Arizona County high points do you have left out of the 15?
I still have 9 left. Okay. So like I said, I came out last year with this grand plan of I was going to drive around and get all these things, and they were all under snow. And this year, it's a much, much drier spring. And so the ones that even would normally have snow often are very accessible. So completely okay. different experience from year to year. So you don't have to just come out and grab them once. You can go back, you know, each time somebody goes up Mount Lemmon is probably a different experience depending on the season or the year.
Oh, that's so fun. So have you seen any wildlife while out hiking in Arizona?
Absolutely. So we talked earlier about the Kofa Wilderness. Because I did that hike in the late afternoon as it was getting kind of dusky, I saw a couple herd of the bighorn sheep that were up on the mountains there.
Wow.
Both when I was going up and then when I was coming back down. Could have been the same herd. There was about 60 of them. So it was a pretty substantial, and a lot of mamas and babies at the time because
wow.
it was February. So that's pretty cool. When I was in the southern portion of Arizona on the Arizona Trail, saw Gila monster, which are protected.
You did? Wow.
Yes. And so, do not touch Gila monsters. If you
do, they're super venomous.
Yes. And, they will not approach you. They don't really like humans. They're somewhat skittish of us. So people know, like, if you go into the ER, they're like, oh, I got bit by a Gila monster. They're like, okay, well, here's your ticket for touching the Gila monster because they don't come to you. You've got to pick it up.
For the listeners who don't know what a Gila monster is, the name sounds very intimidating. It is like, it looks like an iguana, large lizard mm-hmm. kind of, mm-hmm. and it has a very unique, orange and black
yes.
pattern. I'll put a picture of it on YouTube. But it's beautiful and elusive, and I've always wanted to see one in Arizona because it is unique to that region, mm-hmm. but I haven't.
Well, it's one of those wonderful things about, you know, desert hiking. On the flip side of desert hiking, the things they don't want to see is rattlesnakes. Unfortunately, there's, you know, quite a few in the desert. Mm-hmm. But if you're super lucky, I have never seen one, but I know that they do exist. As you go through the Grand Canyon, there's a unique variety of rattlesnake that has adapted to its environment there, and they're pink because of the rocks to blend with their environment. So
wow.
if you never knew about pink rattlesnakes, the one place you're going to see them is in the Grand Canyon.
I had no idea. You know, I saw a diamondback on Wasson Peak in Saguaro National Park. Mm-hmm. Is that how it's pronounced, or is it Wasson?
Wasson, I think.
Okay, Wasson Peak. So I was like, I wanted to do the National Park High Point. So mm-hmm. I timed it to do a sunset hike. So when I was coming down, I could watch the sunset. And as I was coming down, there was this snake, just, it took up the whole trail. And there was this part of the trail where I couldn't really walk around because like on
yeah,
one side.
There's some drop-offs, yeah.
Yeah, it was just a drop-off and then it went up. And so I just stood there. I'm like, oh, it'll move. And I was standing there forever. And I don't know why I did this, but I called my husband, who's my boyfriend at the time. I'm like, what do I do? And he's like, well, what am I going to do? I was like, well, I don't know. Meanwhile, it's getting darker and this thing won't move. And I'm thinking like, maybe I can jump. I didn't do that. I just waited even longer. And it, you know, I got to watch the sunset. It's just standing there. But, I didn't know it was a diamondback until I really just looked at its back and noticed they are in fact diamonds.
Yeah, that's scary stuff. I had one of the friends I was hiking with on the Arizona Trail. He was from Tehachapi, California, which is on the Pacific Crest Trail, and so he's so used to seeing, you know, rattlesnakes left and right. He would, you know, take his trekking pole and like flick them off, and I'm like, leave those alone, leave them alone.
Oh my gosh.
Because I want nothing to do with a rattlesnake. I'm like, it's got a rattle to tell you not to come near it. Like, this is nature's way of saying, leave me alone.
Yeah.
So,
well, at least they have that rattle. I think that's a courtesy.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the other wildlife that I saw was javelina, kind of at dusk. Mm-hmm. For people who don't know what javelina are, they kind of look like wild boar. They're not actually part of the porcine family. They're some sort of desert pecorari, I think is what they call them, but they look like wild boar, but they're maybe like 40 to 60 pounds. And I think it's what, like, maybe what a pig and a raccoon would have made if they mated, because they're like little trash pandas. They love to go, and people are a lot of people here in Tucson, they don't put their trash out until the morning that the trash is coming, because the javelina will get into your trash, and just like a raccoon would.
And they like to eat the prickly pear, the fruit.
And they like human food too.
Yeah, they do.
So protect your food if you're hiking. So I definitely saw some javelina. I have never seen a desert tortoise, but they're out here as well. And I think the most unique and scary thing I've ever seen while out hiking here in Arizona was a mountain lion. And that was near Flagstaff. And I was hiking. It was kind of, it was just after sunrise, and I'm hiking down a trail. And actually, it was closer to Williams than Flagstaff. And I'm hiking to get, some mountains that are kind of on the western side of Flagstaff, Williams area. And I'm going up the trail, not paying a lot of attention. There's nobody else out there, and I see something, an animal on the trail, maybe 150 meters ahead of me, and it looks like a golden retriever. And I'm thinking to myself,
Oh, what a good
oh,
boy. I
some
should go and pet
yeah, there's somebody out here with a dog ahead of me. And a lot of people like to hike with their dog off leash. I'm not sure that the desert's the best place to do that, but in northern Arizona, it's less desert. It's just very rocky, and there's lots of trees. And I'm thinking, oh, there's this, dog, and I'm kind of following up the path. I'm not getting much closer to it because it's kind of going to, nice little trot up the path. And then it makes a sharp right turn to get, go off the trail and into the wood line. And that's when I realized that's not a golden retriever. That's a mountain lion. And you can see its shape and its long tail. And oh my goodness, I immediately turned around and decided I was going to go in a different direction because I don't know where this mountain lion's going to hang out. And I'm not really interested in finding out because,
No. Did you
but
run
it,
or did were you
no,
able to take
no.
off?
I didn't run because I know that they have a prey instinct that they want to go after things that they see running, because they're predators. So if they see a rabbit running, then they're thinking food, and I'm not going to run. I'm going to be as quiet as possible and just kind of turn around and walk back down the trail because I don't think it knew I was there because I was behind it. And so, yeah, so I walk back, and maybe 5 minutes later, I walk into a crowd, and there's a state park ranger who is leading a group of people down a trail on some sort of birding thing. And I tell him, oh, I just saw a mountain lion. He's like, are you sure? Did it have a short tail or a long tail? Because he wanted to know if it was a bobcat or a mountain lion. I said, oh, no, it had a long tail. And he was so excited. He's like, where did you see it? You very rarely see them. And I was like, one is enough for me. Thank you very much. And I continued on a different trail hiking that morning.
That's my number one
So
fear.
yeah,
I've heard that mountain bikers often have encounters with mountain lions because they will, race down a trail. And then a mountain lion sees them going fast and thinks, prey.
yeah, I've heard the same thing.
That's
So,
so
but
scary.
yeah, lots of wildlife, lots of things like roadrunner and quail, and you can
Oh, road,
see,
yeah, there's a ton of those in Yuma. They're always running on a
yeah,
road, at least when I've seen them.
absolutely. I saw one on the top of a wall the other day. It was like a maybe 6 foot tall stucco wall with like bricks atop of it, like decorative around somebody's house. And the roadrunner was running along the top of the wall the other day. These guys are so hilarious. No wonder they ended up in the cartoons.
Yeah. I've never seen a desert tortoise either, but I remember when I was in Tucson, I think it was like the one of the botanical gardens out there, they had this like adopt a desert tortoise program. And I was like, "Oh, I want to do that." So I, went into the visitor center or whatever for more information. I looked at the pamphlet, and the requirements that you had to have in your backyard were just so extensive. I mean, you had to have like a little pond, a bridge, all this grass, all these different vegetables. And I'm like, I can't do this. My heart was in the right place, but I can't do this.
Well, who knows? Maybe you'll see one as you go out and get another, peak or high point.
Yeah. Well, and I think about how long a desert tortoise lives and the condition in which they live. And then I look at these requirements that they want me to have in my backyard. And I'm like, this is a lot. A bridge? Are you kidding?
Well, it's got to be replicating something in nature, right?
I'm sure. But yeah, we said no to that one. You know, I see a lot of white-tailed deer when I was in Tucson. They would...
And rabbits as well, too. The cottontails running around.
Yeah. I saw a porcupine when I was at Humphrey's Peak.
Oh, wow. That's exciting.
Yeah. Other than that, just a lot of mosquitoes or flies or whatever on Humphrey's Peak at the top, at the summit.
Well, see, my Humphrey's Peak experience was a lot like your petrified forest experience. It was so, so windy when we got up there. It was maybe late May, early June, and it was just one of those windy, windy days where you're struggling to stay upright. And for those who visited Humphrey's Peak, you know, you come out of the forest and you come up near a saddle and you still have a little bit of a ways to go to get over to Humphrey's Peak on these rocks. And you're like struggling to stand up and not fall on the rocks. And it was quite the adventure.
Wow. You know, and the wind was so strong in Petrified Forest that I was like, how has that not turned into a tornado? There's like nothing around. I'm like, there's nothing here to block this wind. Why doesn't that area get tornadoes? I don't know, but that wind was unbelievable.
So, yeah, so I still have quite a few of the high points left to do because of, you know, like I said, the weather conditions. But I am looking forward to each time I get to come down here, whether it's, you know, in the winter as a snowbird or, you know, we've got the next convention coming up in September in California. And it's not too far. People could, if they really wanted to, they could make a very easy trip to Arizona. Like I mentioned before, Hualapai Mountain Park is maybe an hour from Las Vegas. So it's very doable for people who are looking for a different adventure, especially if they're driving to the convention this year.
That's a good time of year. We drove to Lone Pine from, I think the conventions, they're going to climb the Nevada High Point, right?
But if you're if you're driving to or from the Southwest or Texas, you're going to come right through and see all these different high points.
You're right. Oh, I can't wait to get. So we're trying to get back out to Yuma. If and when we do get back out to Yuma, one of the hikes that I want to do, you know, when we drive out to Tucson is Picacho Peak State Park.
Ooh.
It's a beautiful mountain. And it's really beautiful in the springtime with the blooms. And I've never climbed it. I've just always driven past it on Interstate 8. And I was like, I have to do that one day. So that is my next goal in Arizona. And of course, I always apply for the backcountry permit in the Grand Canyon. And I always lose. And when I get that email telling me that I lost the lottery, not that, you know, it's just a chance or whatever. The way that they word it is so funny because you think that you won with the way that they word it. It's like, congratulations, you won an opportunity to, you know,
by next year.
Yeah, something like that, where I was so excited. Like, I would scream, like, oh my gosh, I finally got it. And then you actually dig into the words and you're like, I didn't win this at all. And I think they should just change that that part of the process to be a little more brutally honest, because getting my hopes up like that is rude. Anyway, I'll keep applying for that because I want to do the Rim-to-Rim and camp down there at the Bright Angel Campground. And what else do I want to do in Yuma or Arizona? I would love to ski at Mount Lemmon, just to say that I did. And I want to go to the Wave. That's another permit that I lose, or a lottery that I lose all the time. I do want to go to Antelope Canyon. I was at Monument Valley a couple years ago, and that was one of the coolest experiences of my life because I just had a tent and I got a little tent spot at the Monument Valley KOA. And I just watched the sunrise over Monument Valley. And I'm like, this tent spot was like $7. And I'm looking around all these Mercedes Sprinter vans. And it's like all these, you know, like boondocking lifestyle that can actually cost a lot of money. But I just drove up there, pitched a tent at the KOA, and had the most beautiful sunrise experience, in one of the most beautiful sunrises I've ever seen in my life. And then I did take a tour of the monument with a Navajo guide, and that was an incredible experience. But yeah, I want to go skiing in Flagstaff too, because again, you can, why not?
Okay.
And maybe
Humphreys Peak.
That's right. Yeah, everyone who's done Humphreys Peak knows that you can ski in Arizona. And then, what else do I want to do? You know, there's some water sports that you can partake in while in Arizona. Of course, you can raft down the Colorado River. It's easier to go with a guide because the wait list is so long. But then the Colorado River is also much more tame down towards Yuma. And there are a lot of people that just kind of sit there and float. That's a fun thing to do on a hot day or a mild day. And yeah, I just want to get back there and be back in the desert. And just those sunsets and those sunrises are just what I would look forward to every day out there. It's beautiful.
For sure.
And I want to go back to Kofa and go camping, but this time, you know, as a family. So that's what I'm looking forward to. What's on your Arizona bucket list after you complete the County High Points? Because I feel like you've done every bucket list item that people would want to do in Arizona. You've done. You've done the Rim to Rim to Rim, the Arizona Trail, all the Mogollon Rim Trail. What else is left?
Well, there's a lot of great trails here. Arizona has got a great trail community. Some of the best trail stewards and trail towns that I've experienced anywhere on any trail. So for me, I'd love to do the Grand Enchantment Trail, which is not a trail. It's more of a route. It goes from Phoenix to Albuquerque. So it crosses through Arizona into New Mexico. That's one of my bucket list trips. It's about 800 miles as well. There is a trail called the Mogollon Rim Trail, also a route, and it starts near Prescott and then continues all the way to the New Mexico border. So another east-west trail. It's super exciting just to be able to spend the entire 800 miles walking, you know, back and forth underneath the rim and seeing that natural feature. But I think before I'll get to either one of those, because, you know, we've talked about this, high pointers are list makers, and we'd love to check off our list. I think I'd love to try the 2020 challenge, because there's not a lot of overlap between the 20 peaks that are on that challenge and the 20 county high points. So, you know, you may go out to Graham County and get Mount Graham, but that's not the peak that's actually on the 2020 list. So, you know, you've got opportunities to go back and visit the same mountain range again, but get a different peak. And so, you know, it's 20 peaks and 20 canyons. And just the mix of that diversity is just, I don't know, there's something just really appealing about such a unique experience, and a list of 40 new things to see and do, right?
Love a good list. And you know, that's it's right. A great state to do these things in, because when it gets too hot in the desert, you can go up to Flagstaff. Or in Yuma, when it got too hot, I would actually drive over to California, in the San Jacinto State Park, or San Gorgonio, or just anything in the San Gabriel Range. You could get up to higher elevations just by driving a couple hours. It's a great place to be.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Okay, so on normal episodes, I like to finish each show by asking a guest, what are some podcasts, documentaries, or books that are outdoor related that you would recommend to listeners? Now, since this is a State 48 episode, what are some Arizona-based books, documentaries, or podcasts that you would recommend to listeners?
In terms of books, the best book that I've read in the last 6 months about Arizona, which absolutely made me so excited to get back out here again, was a book called A Walk in the Park by Kevin Fidarco. And it is about his journey with a friend of his who happens to be a National Geographic photographer. And they went through the Grand Canyon from the far eastern end of the Grand Canyon to the far western portion. So for, anybody who thinks that the rim to rim to rim is hard, it is nothing compared to this, off trail traverse. There are some places in the canyon where you can go east to west on some trails, but a lot of it is takes some really skilled orienteering and canyoneering and navigation and route finding. And it's not something I will ever have the skills to probably do in my lifetime. So reading about this adventure that he went on with his friend and their hubris and thinking that it was just going to be a walk in the park was really, really fantastic. And there's so much about the Grand Canyon's history and geology and the plant and wildlife in there that it's a wonderful story. Highly, highly recommended. It's out in hardcover right now. And in terms of if you want to watch something in video format, there is a YouTuber out there. He's a hiker. He goes by the trail name Darwin. His channel is called Darwin on the Trail. And about 5 years ago, he released a documentary on the Arizona Trail called Through the Great Southwest. And I happened to be in Arizona at the time he was doing the documentary release, and he did a showing of it initially in Flagstaff and then a second one in Phoenix. So I went to the Phoenix one, and oh my goodness, that was in 2020. And I knew immediately I wanted to hike the Arizona Trail after watching that documentary. So If people are curious on seeing like what the trail is like, what the trail community is like, I don't remember how long it is, maybe an hour long, but he has it now out for free on YouTube. So this last few months, he put it out on his YouTube channel, Darwin on the Trail. And it is a super, super documentary on Arizona.
That's perfect. I will watch that tonight with my husband. And you know what? Now that you said the name A Walk in the Park, I actually have read that. It was an audiobook, so I listened to someone else read it. But I am so bad with titles when it comes to audiobooks because, you know, you don't have that physical cover that you look at every time before you open the book. You just kind of press play. But as soon as you said East to West, I'm like, oh, I know that story. That is a great book. And yeah, really smart guy. But you can tell he even recognizes how naive he was going into it.
Yeah. And he likes also, if you're into, and this is, I know this is a total nerdy thing, but if you're into, like, when people put footnotes into things, they will often tell like a little secondary story. And so he has these little footnotes in there about, well, my partner wants you to say that we weren't really being that reckless and he thought it was a smart plan at the time, but
yeah,
it was great.
Yeah. He's got, he says that in the audiobook too.
Yeah, so if you like that kind of storytelling, but it's just a great story about the canyon and the history and an adventure, and it's got all the things rolled up into one. So it's probably, you know, one of the top books I'm recommending to people right now.
That's great. That's awesome. Yeah, and I agree. That was a great book, and I'm going to check out that YouTube documentary, Darwin on the Trail, tonight. Well, Patty, this has been so much fun talking about the Great State 48, the Grand Canyon State of Arizona. Thank you for sharing all of your knowledge and your experience. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, and best of luck with your Arizona endeavors.
Thank you so much, and look forward to maybe hiking one of the Arizona peaks with you, Lauren.
Oh, that would be fun. Let's do that.
That'd be great.